Hello, Kathy.
Hi.
Welcome to Dearborn Blog.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the sixth episode of We Are In This Together. And our guest today is Kathy, who is originally from Michigan, but she has been living in Argentina. And what accent do you use for the past few years? Let me pull up here the short, modest bio that was provided to me. So she's been living in Argentina for 11 years. She's raised three spunky teenagers in one room as a single mom, while also managing to frolic around the globe as a travel writer. Interests include gardening, working with medicinal plants, shamanic healing, beautiful picnics, and finding joy in the little things. Thanks for joining us, Kathy. So this is, as I told you, is going to be casual.
Okay.
And it's basically sharing our personal narrations, our personal stories. Do you hear any cutting in the sound?
There's a little bit, but I can understand everything you're saying, but there is a little bit of almost
okay
sporadic static. But
did it stop now? Right?
No. When you speak, it there's a little bit of static.
So when I speak. Yeah, it looks like it's coming from my end.
Okay.
Okay. I hope it will go away. Do you have some do you have some healing plans for that? Probably that just provides patience.
Yeah.
So
it's the least of anyone's worries right now. I can hear you and understand you. So
okay, great. So before we jump into the subject, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Why are you living in Argentina?
Okay. In what seems like a completely different lifetime ago, I lived in suburban Michigan over on the west side in a little town called Ada, close to Grand Rapids. And I was living what everyone around me thought was a dream life. My ex-husband made a lot of money as a real estate developer. I was able to have my kids and be a stay-at-home mom in a huge house and blah 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 blah. It was all really beautiful on the outside, and it was so vacant and boring and lame from the inside. And I realized that it was just dulling me. And the more I just accepted it, I was really scared that I would wake up in 10 years or in 20 years and be doing the same thing that was not fulfilling me at all. And I let it go to a point that it then became urgent. I can't describe it in any other way. I think it was a wake-up call of like, there's this path, you can keep going down it, but you know that you hate it. Or there's this path of try something new that actually speaks to you. Argentina made no logical sense at the time. I didn't speak Spanish. I'd never been to Argentina. I didn't have any work there. I didn't have a contact in the country. It was just detach myself from my old lifestyle. And I decided, and within 3 weeks, sold, gave away, threw out everything, and had one-way tickets for me and the family to Argentina. And it made no logical sense, but looking back, it was absolutely perfect. I've made...
So how did you make that? Although, like, how did you make that pick, Argentina? Like, how did it just come about?
I don't know. There was no logical sense. I wanted to raise my kids in a Latin American country. They spoke a little bit of Spanish at the time because in Michigan they went to a Spanish immersion elementary school. So I figured the shift wouldn't be too jarring for them. Plus, raising small kids in a Latin American country, it's very family oriented. That was alluring. It was very welcoming also to foreigners. When I moved here, I wasn't just some gringa. I was treated as well as a local. I was one more person. It didn't matter where I came from or my Spanish. I was treated as an equal, which I think is something really beautiful about Argentine culture. Awesome. It was like, okay, you're here now. You're one of us.
Did you speak Spanish before you moved there?
Not a word.
No.
In fact, I had hola. Mm-hmm. And at the time, I thought it was really cool because I knew adios. And then I got here and they don't even use adios here. It's all ciao. So half of my vocab went straight out the window is useless here.
But you learned. Now I'm assuming you speak fluently Spanish.
I do. Argentines speak a weird Spanish. It's actually called castellano. Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting accent. I've fallen in love with it. Mm-hmm. But I have learned just out of necessity and desire to communicate where I'm at. I'm not going to live here and not speak the language. Mm-hmm. That's disrespectful.
Is it also safe to assume that you dance tango now?
Oh, I tried. I actually took a tango lesson one time and I was told that I was too boppy for tango. I couldn't keep the very dramatic. It's so dramatic. And I couldn't keep the... I couldn't hold it. So, no.
You were too nice for tango.
I don't know about nice, just too... I don't know.
Do your kids love it there? Do you visit often the U.S. or you don't?
I do because all of my other families in Michigan still over in Grand Rapids. I get to Michigan. It depends every year. I usually try to tie it into a work project. Before COVID. I worked as a travel writer, which that's nobody's exactly commissioning guidebooks right now or sending me off on work projects. But if I would get a project, let's say in Mexico or in New York or somewhere, I would always make sure to tack on a flight to Michigan to see family. Some years it's worked out that I could visit multiple times a year. Other times it's been maybe 2 years that I haven't visited. I got back once last year, last November, December.
Great. What city in Argentina do you live in?
I don't live in the city. The nearest city is about, let's say, 20, 25 miles away. Mm-hmm. And its name is El Bolsón. It's a tiny town. Uh-huh. I live up, a lot of gravel roads up into the mountains. So I live really, really rurally.
Nice.
The town itself is a pretty cool town. It really began to get populated in the 70s when Argentina was under a military dictatorship. And a lot of people went into exile. They tried to flee the country. They tried to do whatever they can, because if you were at that time open as more liberal, you weren't exactly welcomed under that mm-hmm. dictatorship. Mm-hmm. There was a group of Argentines who went deep into the mountains. At this point, there was no highway, no road, no anything that came here. Tucked in a valley in the mountains, pretty inaccessible, and they decided that they didn't want to flee their country, and they also didn't want to have somebody tell them how they could live. all the liberals, all the artists, the musicians, the poets, they all flocked here and lived a very hippie lifestyle, but like authentically hippie lifestyle. They showed up with no money, no jobs, and they began to build from what there was. And from their roots doing that, El Bolsón has become a center worldwide for natural construction, building from straw bales, adobe, natural materials. It's also a center for permaculture. It's a pretty great town. It's held on to its roots, at least its roots where it began to get really populated, really well. They're proud of it. El Bolsón is very different from the rest of Argentina, and everybody in the rest of Argentina just kind of lets El Bolsón get away with anything. Kind of like, oh, that's El Bolsón. They don't even follow our rules. It's kind of its own little subculture.
So Kathy, that's very interesting. I feel like we need to talk a lot about that experience living in rural Argentina, totally different culture. And I think within even the context of Argentina, where you're living and the lifestyle is also a shift from the big cities, Argentina, like Buenos Aires and yes, other cities. Just wondering, as far as like a trip to Michigan, how long does it take you from one city to another?
I should be able to answer this as a travel writer like that. But when I travel, I kind of go into, I travel a lot. So if I get on a plane, I go into complete zone out mode of, okay, I'm on a plane. I'll get off when it lands. If I start thinking it's 18 hours, it becomes a lot more than if I just say, okay, I'm on a plane now. Mm-hmm. I'll get off when it lands. I try not to overthink it because then I start doing the countdowns and it seems longer. For me to get to Michigan, I would have to take a bus to the nearest big town, which is Bariloche. That has an airport. So I would take a two and a half hour bus ride to Bariloche, a 2 and a little bit hour flight to Buenos Aires. If I had to guess, I would say it would be another 11 to getting somewhere like Atlanta, Chicago, and then usually another flight from there to Grand Rapids.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Do you ever see tourists from America in your town?
I do. And really? I host volunteers also through sites like Workaway, travelers who want a place to stay in and food in exchange for helping out and volunteering. I have a lot of people who come to learn about the garden or working with medicinal plants or building from natural materials. And so they come in, they stay, they learn, they help out, we share. And a lot of them do come from the States, and they like kind of finding a home base here with somebody who can speak English, because a lot of them don't speak Spanish, and they can actually ask questions and learn and share in a way that the language isn't a barrier.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So today is, you know, April 2nd, 2020. The world has surpassed 1 million cases of COVID-19. And this is kind of an event, very few events such as that, that force us to come all together. There are other events that we don't really pay attention to. There are many things, actually most of the things connect us together in one way or another, but we forget about that or we try to ignore them. But this one has defeated us and defeated our ignorance and have united us and showed us that we cannot be separate. So, and that's why me and you living thousands of miles apart, we can speak about this same experience as far as in general. I don't know how much of a degree of self-isolation you're doing there, but in general, you know, self-isolation and, you know, just waiting for this pandemic to pass us. So tell us about your experience and the experience of your town with facing the mm-hmm. coronavirus pandemic.
It all happened. Argentina took really swift action. Argentina was one of the first countries in the world to take it incredibly seriously. And it went from, wow, there's this virus everyone's kind of starting to talk about a little bit, to Argentina went in and slammed shut borders, shut down domestic transportation, had lockdown, one of the very first countries to go into lockdown. Argentina is usually very disorganized and very lax and like, oh, no pasa nada, like everything's cool. I am so impressed and grateful for the Argentine government reaction to this. They seem to have pretty full support from the Argentine people too, anybody living here. It seems like everybody's been very respectful of the pretty harsh lockdowns, but it did happen fast. For example, I have three kids. One of them is almost 20, and she was living in Los Angeles, then in Buenos Aires. She came here for a visit. And she went into town, which is like 25 or so miles away, to go stay with a friend in town for a few days, just to kind of break it up from very, she's a city girl. So living up here on the mountain is a stretch for her. She studies fashion in Los Angeles. So she went into town to go stay with a friend. And in that amount of time, nobody expected it to happen, but the country went into lockdown. I think now it's going on a couple of weeks ago. I don't remember the exact date. Since then, I've not been able to see her. You literally cannot be out and about unless you can prove that you are going to or have gone to the pharmacy or the supermarket nearest to your house. You can't even pick which supermarket you want to go to. You need to show that I'm literally going as little as possible. Mm-hmm. In the grocery stores from day one, they had the distancing. They would only, in our big supermarket, they would only allow a certain amount of people in the store at a time. Let's say a really big supermarket, not quite like a, I'm trying to remember what Michigan has. It's not as big as like a Meijer or anything like that. It's a much mm-hmm. smaller scale, but it's a proper supermarket. And they would only let 10 people in at a time. Wow. To go in, you had to wait for somebody to go out. A security guard would let one more person in. And at the lines, they would have the social distancing already marked out with tape. And this was on day one when nobody in the U.S. was even really talking about coronavirus much yet. Mm-hmm. And Argentina already had really heavy things in place. Since it all happened so fast, my daughter did not get up here because they shut down transportation. They shut down everything.
Wow.
And so she's there. It's nice to have her close. I know in case of any really big emergency, I could get her up here, or I would do what it takes to whatever needed to happen. It would mm-hmm. happen. My and, other daughter. Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to ask, like, how did people react to very early on sanctions and limitations?
Really surprisingly respectfully. They understand that it's for the greater good. Argentina is not that, I'm speaking from my just opinion. This isn't based on like economic facts or anything like that. It's from what mm-hmm. I see. Argentina puts people over money. It puts family over everything. Argentina is a country that is an economic disaster. They've lived through huge economic crisis all the time. They're prepared for that.
Mm-hmm.
Their economy is used to being very volatile and unstable. They're not going to be scared about an economy tanking. They know they can handle that. They've done it before. If it's not now, it was probably going to be in 3 years. I'm no economist. This is just from what I see in by living here. People, on the other hand, are everything in the Argentine culture. So they're doing it because they really do think, first and foremost, as a top priority, the health and safety and well-being of family members, of neighbors, of friends. They naturally put that first, and there's no sense of, oh man, my stocks are going down. It's like, no, we're keeping the neighbor safe. Like, she's at risk. Of course we're gonna do this. Everyone, come on.
So how is
I can't speak to big cities. I live in a rural place where community is huge already. So I don't feel comfortable speaking about how it is in Buenos Aires. From what I've heard from friends, there's a lot of solidarity. But down here, at least in Patagonia, everybody is completely fine that I know with respecting it.
Are the hospitals overwhelmed like what's happening here in Michigan?
No, you're
handling it just fine because of very early quarantine that took place.
And they prepared. The military came out and set up tents, basically like pop-up hospitals all around the country before there's still no need for them yet, but they're there, they're ready, they're prepared. The Argentine government, from the news trickling into me, has friends around the world. They haven't pissed off as many countries as, let's say, the U.S. worldwide. We've had a lot of countries reaching out and sending supplies, and there's no pride in not accepting them. It's like, thank you, we'll take them. Thank you, we'll take them. They're being really, in my opinion, really smart and proactive. I think we're still, I need to check. I've been trying to stay off the news, it gets really heavy. I check in every once in a while to see if there's anything I really need to know and then try to step away. But the last I checked, Argentina as a country was still in maybe 1,500 cases total. Through a country
that's very good.
Huge. Yeah. Buenos Aires has about the same population as New York City.
That's good. That's good news. Yeah, they're all talking about Latin America, how they handled it really well, South America specifically.
It's a region that knows their resources. They know what they have available, what they don't have available. It's a region that knows crisis. And so they don't go through the initial freak out. Oh my God, how is this going to turn out? They're like, let's do what we got to do.
Right. So not to turn this into more like reporting.
It's okay.
And to go back to the personal story. So tell us how was your lifestyle? How did your lifestyle get affected by this, and how are you handling it?
Okay. Lifestyle did not change that much. I live rurally, far from everything. When I'm home, I love being at home. I like my own company, so I'm not going crazy. I don't get bored because I can relax into idleness. I think I've really softened up on the mentality I had when I was living in the States of needing to be productive. If I can get through every day relaxed, keeping an axis, keeping centered, realizing what I can do and what I can't do, what's in my control, what's out of my control, it's a day well spent, and I don't need to check off a list of, okay, well, I'm not working right now, so I should at least get this done. I don't have that. Today I made donuts. I played with a kitten in the garden. I took a nap in a hammock. I made a beautiful dinner, and yeah, that's great.
Awesome. So, tell us a little bit about your, you know, your the description in your bio as a person who uses medicine plants for medicine. How did that also help you, you know, prepare your immunity system? I know that you don't want to speak from a, that's not what the interview is about. It's really about your personal story, but we'd love to hear if you have any thoughts from that expertise, any recommendations even.
I'm somebody who likes to be preventative. When it comes to healthcare, I don't like to respond to an issue. I would rather avoid an issue. So I consider food as one of the very first medicines. I consider thoughts as medicine, if you can manage them. And plants for me are where I go for strengthening, for healing. I felt really good, just, and I don't even care if it's just a placebo effect. I feel really good with my stockpile of certain tinctures. And if I take them and I feel like, okay, now I'm ready, I have a shield, then something's already shifted and I have a shield. I work with plants that are from around here, which took a while to learn, just because I was so used to Michigan plants and everything here is completely different. For example, right now I'm just doing immune system building in general. I'm not doing anything to try to target a specific virus or anything like that. I'm just keeping healthy and keeping clean and strong. I make echinacea tinctures with echinacea that I grow here. It's very good for boosting the immune system. As soon as COVID started, I started on that, just to feel kind of like, okay, I'm doing something. This is something within my control that can make me feel like I'm doing something positive. So I'll do that. That's the main one I've been taking around this. The other one, and I don't make the tinctures, but I have them on hand, would be working with Bach flower remedies. There's ones that deal with anxiety or fears or shock or trauma. Mm-hmm. And just their rescue remedy, I think, is really helpful in a time like this where you're feeling a lot and you don't even necessarily know where it's all coming from or what it's all triggering. It's just a lot. A Bach flower rescue remedy for me is helpful and recommendable in this time. Mm-hmm.
My aunt, she gave me a recipe of orange, lemon, and ginger.
Stimulating.
And some turmeric and and some hot water in the morning.
Yeah.
Would you say that's good?
I'd say I love your aunt. For me, that would be just very uplifting, to keep things not sludging down into heaviness, to keep things moving and uplifted.
Mm-hmm. That seems more like of exciting the metabolism and right? Yeah. From Michigan, you mentioned some, you know, is there, knowing our market here and our plants here, what are some recommendations for us here, maybe?
I don't try to get all crazy or overthink it. I would go with echinacea, immune system builder. I work with propolis, same deal, just kind of overall strengthening. I don't think you need to go too crazy.
Yeah.
I think that the cleaner your system is through the food you put in it, the water you're drinking, the thoughts you're filling it with, you then don't need to ingest a ton of things.
Right.
That's, I think simpler is better. I think clear out what you have in your body and get it a little bit like not so weighed down with stuff. And your body knows what to do. Right. Your body knows how to protect itself, defend itself.
So from a person, Kathy, who was living our lifestyle now, right? I mean, before coronavirus, I mean, as Michiganders, and then, you know, moving, finding your journey in life and moving and kind of, you know, finding a destination that you want to get to. Sometimes when we are in an environment, we don't see really the toxicity in some habits. So I want to get some insight from you, because I'm sure that you've thought to yourself, how were we doing that? Or if come back to Michigan today, you would live your life differently. So tell us, how would you live your life differently if you were in Michigan again?
Well, I would probably continue to live my life how I do here, and I would just transplant myself to Michigan. There's no going back for me on certain things. When I go back to Michigan, the most jarring thing to me is the superficiality of most of the conversations. It's really empty, and there's no connections going on. It's just kind of words flying around that are socially acceptable. And nobody really on the other end gives you their presence to really take in what you're saying. And most people are so busy thinking about what they're going to say next that they don't even listen to the other person. In Argentina, it's much more common, at least I'll speak for Patagonia. If somebody asks me, hey, how are you doing? In the States, it'd be like, oh yeah, good, thanks, you, without even thinking. I could be having the most helliest day, and I'd still in Michigan be like, yeah, great, you. Here, it's much more common that the person asking actually wants to know how you're doing. And I can answer with, hey, Rodrigo, I don't know, we'll just make someone up. I'm actually having a really bad day. And it's been hard. I woke up feeling like this, and then this happened, and like, I'm kind of in a funk. And it could spontaneously turn into a hug, right? Hey, let me go treat you to a coffee. Like, it's much more real. And there's not, at least in Patagonia, Buenos Aires is its own monster. But at least in Patagonia, the relationships are really straightforward and genuine, and people are actually looking to connect. I go back to the States and it makes me sick, just the vacantness of a lot of the conversations. Also, what I don't like is the lack of spontaneity in the States. I had three toddlers when I left there, and it was getting things ready for play dates. It's like, oh yes, we'd love to have Ava over on the 17th between 6 and 7. And the 17th is 2 weeks out. Here, it's like, hey, my kid's bored. Your kid's bored? Okay, to have them ride their bike 10 kilometers down the mountain road. And if they don't come back, it's probably because they just stayed for dinner because they were having fun. It's really spontaneous. Mm-hmm. And I work well in that type of culture. The let me put it in my planner and put all these reminders, and it becomes like a chore or just one more thing to do. I don't like that.
Right. As you know, the most important thing for our immunity is reducing stress.
Yes.
And I think when you said that thoughts and words are the first medicine, I think that's an important fact. So can you talk to us a little bit more about that, especially from your own personal reflections and experience?
Yeah. Well, that's all I can speak from. I've always been, not just through this situation, a big proponent that words carry energy, and we are energetic beings. And so words can impact you, even when they're thrown around thoughtlessly, or not conscientiously. And little things can make a huge shift. I'm not stuck at home, because that would spiral me into the, oh, poor me, and going into resistance and fighting something because no one's going to make me do something. I'm safe at home. Okay, that's great. I'm grateful to be at home. It's my safe space. I'm grateful I have a home. Focusing on what you can do. I see so many people spiraling into fear, and obviously, yes, there's a lot to be aware of. There's a lot to be attentive of. There's a lot of pretty scary stuff going on right now. But I see people becoming completely sick from fear. And it's like, guys, you're unnecessarily making yourself sick in a situation where your biggest fear is you don't want to become sick. Well, you're doing it to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Just shifting things, shifting the words, focusing on what I'm grateful for, not blindly accepting things based out of fear and panic and terror. I always like to go back to the, okay, this is happening right now. This is what's going on. What if it didn't turn out like the worst case scenarios? What if it, for whatever reason, trajectories change and this thing morphs and shifts and moves along? We get so fixated on a worst case scenario because there's a lot of energy around that. And it's like, mm-hmm. when you don't know what to glom onto and something's constantly hitting you in the face, you're going to be like, oh, it's that.
Right. And but that's why watching the news constantly is not really a good thing.
No, I've been really trying to limit it. There's a difference between staying informed and becoming oversaturated with things that are not helping you. Yeah. So finding the fine line of like, okay, at what point do I feel informed? And then I can shut it off until tomorrow.
Okay, I have a couple more questions before we go to some of our ending traditional questions.
Okay.
Shamanic healing.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a big topic and a tricky one to try to like summarize.
Right.
Okay. Not sure where to go with that.
Define it for us, at least.
Yeah, that's the hard place.
Mm-hmm.
I work with a lot of indigenous communities, mostly in the Brazilian Amazon. And most indigenous communities around the world have some form of shaman, whether they call it that or not. A medicine man, call it what you will. Shamanic healing is just a different way. I'm not saying better or worse than any other type of healing, because in the end, if somebody's healed, I don't care how it happened. Shamanic healing is a way for somebody to connect with energy or different sources of information, whether that be spirits, ancestors, reading energy. Messages can come in a lot of different ways, and you're able to receive information that can then help either yourself, a client, a friend, whoever. It's a way of receiving helpful information that can help get to the root of traumas, of different pains, a lot of things that are showing up in the physical realm have their roots in an emotional pattern, a toxic thought pattern, stuck energy, traumas that are set really rigidly in the system because they haven't been processed, and maybe it happened when the person was one or two and they don't even remember, but it's still there affecting them on a daily basis. It's going in, figuring out where somebody is stuck. These aren't very articulate terms, or like clogged up, or there's interference. And it's just helping clear somebody out so that their own body can be restored and reset to a very strong natural state.
Mm-hmm. So it's more like of a spiritual hearing.
Very much so. For me, at least, I would say, as a general term, I would say it works. For me, it's very spiritual, but you could say if somebody didn't want to go into the spirituality, you could just work on an energy level. You're never adding anything to a person or to yourself. You're unblocking, you're dissolving, you're cleaning, so that you can get back to your natural state, which is really, really powerful. And so it's not somebody doing something, adding something to you. On the contrary, it's somebody helping you figure out how to get to a state where you can help yourself, and just kind of guiding you along that.
Awesome. Beautiful definition.
Not the most articulate, but it's a pretty big topic with.
I know.
That can get a little weird.
It needs a whole session by itself. But I just wanted, you know, to shed some light on it. And you put it in a way that, you know, like answered most of the questions.
Okay.
One more question before we go to the traditions, which is, okay, so there are also things, I'm assuming, in Michigan that you appreciated mostly after leaving.
Lake Michigan? I love Lake Michigan. I've always loved Lake Michigan, even when I lived there. Uh-huh. It's a really special body of water to me. I also missed squirrels. And little woodland creatures that are all like jumpy and erratic. Where I live, there's no chipmunks, there's no squirrels, there's no creatures that just skirt really fast through the forest. And I miss that. I miss oak trees. We don't have oak trees in Patagonia. I miss the Grand Rapids Farmers Market. I used to go there a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I miss Ethiopian food. shout out to Little Africa in Grand Rapids, which is my total hangout.
Yeah, there is also Ethiopian, Blue Nile in Ferndale. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. That one's a little fancier. Mine's divier.
Yeah. Do you have a blog, by the way, or something? Do you have a site that we can plug for you? No, okay.
I don't. I used to in the past, but then as I became a travel writer who needed to make money, I wanted to write more for publications who would just send me a check or a direct deposit and I could live off of it. Instead of the blog, I had a really hard time monetizing. And if I was going to write and raise three kids, I needed to write for reliable income. So I don't do a blog.
What are some magazines or newspapers that you write for?
I do guidebooks for Lonely Planet. I've worked on their last guidebooks for Argentina, for Chile, and for Antarctica.
Mm-hmm.
I also worked on their South America guide. They just did one for vegan travelers, and I covered Argentina and Brazil. I'm so not vegan, but it was.
Yeah, I mean, Argentina is not vegan at all.
No. My three kids are vegetarian, and I raised them vegetarian. Oh, really? It's really easy to do here because, like I said, it's a hippie town, so there's health food stores and access to really great whole foods. But I have no problem eating some of my neighbor's lamb, or I have chickens. I'm not a vegan.
Yeah, if it was daytime, I would have probably asked you for a tour on your premise.
it's so beautiful.
maybe after this pandemic passes, we will do something different. So thanks for the things that we take for granted sometimes here in Michigan. And you know, it's Lake Michigan is just amazing. Having pure water that looks like a beach and just so virgin, you know, that coast is just not feasible for business because it's only
so magical.
It's only open 2 months, you know. It's only it can be, you know, it can be used for few months. So that's why it doesn't attract industry. So it's always like pure and virgin, and one of the most beautiful beaches in the country, really.
It never gets old for me. I can go there a million times and my jaw will drop every time and I'll just be like, oh.
Yeah. How far are you from the beach, by the way? What's the closest beach to you?
Oh, I have a river. It's mine. I have access to a lot of rivers very close, within walking distance. We have the Rio Azul, which is the most ridiculously transparent turquoise water.
Nice.
It's see-through down to easily 30 feet, and you can just watch trout swimming by.
Is it strong current or?
In parts, yes. And in parts, not at all. We also have the Rio Blanco, which is a stronger current. We've got lakes around us, lots of lakes. I'm in the lakes region of Patagonia. So it looks kind of like Switzerland. Lots of alpine lakes, glacial lakes, lots of wildflowers, mountains. It's pretty cliche Switzerland looking.
Beautiful. Like one day we'll visit and we'll buy the guidebook and
the non-vegan one. You'll have the tour guide right here who wrote the guidebook.
Thank you.
Also have a yurt on my property that's available for guests, or I have it up on Airbnb too. But when you come down, it's your home base.
For sure. Thank you. And if you have a link you'd like to post it in the comments later, that would be great. Some people might watch this later and would be interested.
Okay, and they can also feel free to, I'll give you my information and they can contact me direct and chat about anything.
Great. Thank you, Kathy. Okay, now here's my nerd questions.
Oh, I like nerd questions.
Because we're running out of time, I'm going to just ask about your recommendations. I usually ask, like, what's the last thing that you've read or listened to.
Okay.
But I'm going to ask you for recommendations and something like different. You know, there's classicals that, you know, people may always recommend, but we want something like that, you know, it might be special to you. So what's a book that you recommend?
Any poetry by Mary Oliver, I think is really resonating right now with a lot of people, or would resonate with a lot of people. She writes really simple poetry. It's not all frou-frou and trying too hard. She's all about slowing down, finding joy in every moment, connecting with nature, and being appreciative. I think she's really relevant right now.
Awesome.
As for books, I'm a complete Tom Robbins freak.
Oh, really?
Anything by Tom Robbins. He makes me think and laugh and just go, what? He's got zany down pat, and I really, really recommend him. He's not for everyone. He's a lot to take in, but he has a way with words that's very colorful for me and makes me think about the ordinary in extraordinary ways.
All right. We will post it. Okay. Any music? Band or music that you recommend?
I've been told by multiple sources that my music's really boring.
Then most probably I would like it.
I'm really sensitive to how music affects me. And so if anything's too rock for too long, I get unsettled or just like irritated. I really like to use music to create an ambiance in the house, or if I'm gardening, I like really chill music. I like, oh, let's see. I'm a little bit all over the place. I like.
What do you use to music?
What's
do
that?
You use a special app or
I use Spotify.
Do you have a playlist that you?
I've got a bunch of playlists, but they're all very public specific. Playlist? I don't think any of them are public, but they're all for very specific things. It's like this one for when I'm in the greenhouse, this one for when I'm in the garden, this one for when I'm in this mood, this one for house cleaning. Mm-hmm. A general relaxing one that's a go-to for me is Lorena McKennitt. She's like Celtic music that's just soothing and
Lorena, just kind of back. Do you know how to spell that?
Lorena McKennitt.
Okay, I see it. Yes. Okay.
It's awesome. Easy. It's simple. It's beautiful. It's just kind of good background music. If I need a little step up, I like Wax Taylor. It's a little funkier, but still groovy and chill.
All right.
And then if I'm really rocking out, I'm a old school Beastie Boys fan.
All right.
We're talking like Paul's Boutique era. And if I really need a pick me up, I'll usually go there because it's tried and true.
Mm-hmm. We just got a delivery. Okay. How about a show, a last show or a film? I don't know. Are people onto Netflix in Argentina? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What is a show that is, I mean, it's probably going to be a Spanish show, but what is not necessarily?
For me, I watch, I prefer to read and watch movies in English. Just because I can lose myself in a film or a book because I don't have to pass it through the mind of going through translation. So I can shut my mind off and just enjoy without having to think at all. So I watch shows in English. I'm a really big fan of the show OA.
OA?
OA.
Okay.
That one, the first season, I was like, okay. The second season blew my mind. Absolutely just like twisted it and just exploded and melted and just left me going, huh. And then I found out they're not making more seasons. So I'm just kind of in that state still. But I applaud it for its way of making me rethink a lot of things. For a feel-good show, I'm almost cringing saying this. I binge watched Gilmore Girls with my middle daughter because I'm very Lorelai and she's very Rory, and we just we can relate so much and we laugh because it's like watching a mirror of our own relationship. Not exactly a deep thinking one, but it's just like a feel good, easy, easy one. I don't recommend it for most people, but it works for my daughter and I.
Okay, film.
I just watched and I cried from joy and I cried so many different ways. It's a movie called The Shack. My daughter, the same Gilmore Girls daughter, had been bugging me for days and days to watch it. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll get to that. Yeah. And every day she was like, did you watch it? Did you watch it?
Finally, 2017?
What's that?
A 2017 film? Uh-huh.
No idea.
Okay.
The way that the trailer made it look and everything made it look, I was like, this does not look like a movie I would even like. Mm-hmm. The first half hour, I was like, why am I watching this? I don't even like this movie. I stuck with it, and out of nowhere, it morphed into this really beautiful conversation about spirituality that made me understand things like judgment and forgiveness. We're talking some pretty heavy hitting basics. It made me rethink things like that and my approach to things like forgiveness and judgment. And it did it in such a sneaky, simple way. And I feel like me watching it, there was a level of understanding, a before and an after. And after watching it, there's no going back for me on certain ways I think about things. It really broadened my mind.
A life-changing film, it seems.
It really was. And then afterwards, I was like, oh, you know that movie? She was like, yeah, the one you wouldn't watch for a week.
Wow, awesome. Do you listen to podcasts?
Not too much. If I do, there's one called Kind World. Mm-hmm. And it's just little feel-good stories about people doing kind things and spreading kindness.
All right. Thank you.
And then one I just started, I can't say I've listened to too many of them, but I found out it's the brother of a friend of mine from Michigan. Mm-hmm. It's The Art of Intentional Creation.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I can't recommend it too much. I just like jumped in and listened to one, but then I downloaded more. And that's one that I'll be diving into.
Creation. What is it about?
I think in realizing that we are creators, we're creative beings, and we can manifest as long as we get clear on what we want, that we're much more active participants in our life than most people give themselves credit for.
Nice. Okay. Next question is, what is the last epiphany or aha moment that you had?
Oh, the last one.
So yeah, we have a habit in this show that you will ask a question at the end and then we'll add it to the list of questions.
Okay.
So this was a question. Yeah. So this was a question by artist Hadi Al-Dibba from New York.
Okay, good job. It's so simple. It comes across as possibly like not that important or just so obvious. Last night, I was speaking to a teacher of mine from Michigan. And she was like, okay, I was feeling a certain way and wasn't serving me at all. I was just kind of like, meh. And she said, oh, okay. Well, how would it feel if you didn't feel that way? How would it feel if you felt like this better situation? And she held me there and I just had to sit there feeling how that would feel to be in the different state until, whoa, you're feeling it, you're living it, you're already in that different state. And it was such a sneaky way to get rid of the other one. And it was one question that could just dissolve so much charge and fear and anxiety. It's like, okay, well, you're afraid of contracting coronavirus. How would it feel if you knew you were safe? Sit feeling that, hold that energy, fill your body with that safe, good, clear, strong energy. And then you're experiencing that. Like, it's really sneaky. You're already there and you didn't have to try.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
It worked for me. I was like, that's so simple.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks, Kathy, for sharing. Yeah.
Yeah.
A question that was asked by Dr. Adnan Jaber from Dearborn. How will we remind ourselves of the lessons we are learning from this after this passes? Because we probably will forget, you know?
That's a really, really great question.
Have you written anything, Kathy? Have you written any thoughts? No.
No. I would say for everybody, because we're all in this together, worldwide, we're in this together, to approach this situation not as a Well, we just need to kind of do what we need to do to get through it so we can return to normal. Normal's gone. Our what we know of as normal is no longer. We need to accept that whatever it may be, we're entering into a new normal, and we're in a very privileged position to participate in creating what we want new normal to be on a personal level, on a collective level. I would say to not worry about remembering later. I would say focus on right now, creating new normal, so that by the time this passes, you're already in it. You're already committing to and taking time out to be grateful for the connection you have when you phone your neighbor to check in and see if she's okay. Don't stop that when COVID's over or whatever happens with it. Start creating the new normal now. Start conscientiously looking at how you feel in that new normal and be like, wow, that felt really good to check in on my neighbor. Make habits now so that when all this is over or changed or whatever, you're already in it. You're already in that routine. So you don't have to remember anything. You're already living it.
Awesome. Thank you. And the last question was, it's a little bit lighter, so we're ending on a light note. What is a type of food that reminds you of your childhood? This came from Amer Zahar. He's a Palestinian-American comedian.
Okay. I would say... I haven't thought about this food in forever, but I would say... pistachio pudding.
Really? Never heard of it.
Yeah. I've not thought about pistachio pudding in years.
Who used to make it?
I used to make it.
Oh, you used to make it. Okay.
Yeah.
And it reminds you of your childhood?
Yeah. It was something so easy. I wasn't sitting there grinding up pistachios or anything. We had a very processed food household.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would be in like the little like boxes, I think the same brand that makes Jell-O or whatever, in the little boxes, and all you had to do was add some milk and whisk it up. Mm-hmm. In my house, where nobody really baked or put a lot of time and effort into food, I felt really fancy, like making something homemade.
Yeah, you know, we have a Lebanese pistachio ice cream.
Oh.
Which is delicious. And they have it in Shatila. I don't know if you know Shatila, Michigan.
No.
It's a bakery. It's a famous bakery here in Dearborn.
I would love it. I would absolutely love it.
Okay. And what question do you want to ask us, Kathy? And you will answer also yourself.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be something crazy. It can be something simple, you know. You'll
I would ask everybody to visualize, to name, to put words and feelings to what their absolute ideal, even if it seems completely out of reach, to put words and feelings to what their ideal outcome of this pandemic would be. And to sit with it and visualize it and feel it. But we're talking ideal. On a personal level, what do they hope to change in their approach to work, their personal economy, their relationships with their family, their friends, their neighbors, their community? How would you hope that this would change the political climate, the economic climate, the international relations? Just to sit there and name off the absolute ideal, even if it seems so far-fetched, to just for a couple of seconds hold space for that, because this is a pretty magical world we're living in. And crazy stuff happens, and there's infinite possibilities. And to discount one just because it doesn't seem realistic, well, you're already cutting it out and cutting off any energy to actually make it happen. So just to create a little bit of space for possibilities. And in the imagining, I think it really does free people up from that really heavy fear, doom, and gloom. We have enough of that right now. That's in no short supply. What we do need is a little bit of a different take on things.
Thanks, Kathy. And would you like to answer that question? What would be the ideal outcome of this pandemic on a personal level for you?
I would hope that every single person gets clarity. And that's going to look different for every single person on earth. I hope they get clarity on what's important to them, how important their lives, their relationships are to them, and what they're willing to do to put their priorities in line. If family and well-being is your top priority, then don't be putting all your energy elsewhere. I hope that everybody gets clarity and they get kind of the really swift kick in the ass that we're all getting right now living in this pandemic to actually make it happen. If everyone were to come out of this with their priorities straight and motivation to back up their priorities with action, I think the world's going to be a lot more aligned and filled with a lot less stressed and a lot genuinely more fulfilled people. I think that then will then trickle down and change some political states, some economies. Everything's going to kind of morph to accommodate the new normal.
Awesome. Thank you very much for that. And at the end of our program, we just have an opportunity to thank you, Kathy, for being with us. And
thank all you for the best. Me.
I'm sure that the sky at where you're at is has you are able to see more stars than we can.
All the stars. It's really clear skies.
So I'll envy you a little bit for that. And we hope to see you again on a different story. And
anytime.
Thank you very much. And dear listeners, thank you for following. This will be posted on our Facebook page, Dearborn Blog, YouTube, on the website, dearbornblog.com. It also will be podcasted on Dearborn Blog Open Mic Podcast. All the best to Argentina, to you, Kathy, and to our listeners. And good night.
Thank you so much for having me. And I hope to see you down here someday in person. In the meantime, stay safe, stay well. And a big hug to all my Michiganders.
Good night.
Good night. Bye-bye.